Still not sure what's about to provide the biggest beating, the Labour Party or Francesco Bagnaia at the 99th Assen TT. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Now, the great news about this is that you'll know the outcome by the time you listen to the show.
Yeah, you'll see if I was right or not. My money is still on Bagnaia somehow. Welcome to episode 529 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harris, and glad you can join us as ever. And for the first time in almost a month, we're talking about MotoGP on this podcast.
Oh, my
yes!
God, yeah. Oh, my God, let's
we
do
missed-
it.
We missed it. We missed you so much. Thanks for delivering us a mediocre Assen TT again. God damn it. joining us as ever on this esteemed endeavor, first and foremost, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, RJ. How's it going? Did you miss the bikes?
I missed the bikes. I made sure that if I was going to go pull an all-nighter because, like, my sleep schedule was still messed up from being around the world in, like, 3 weeks, then I was going to watch the MotoGP. And I was whelmed. I was appropriately whelmed by Francesco Bagnaia putting down arguably a candidate for beating down of the year. I'd say it's fringe at this moment, but, you know, as the season goes on, we'll consider it.
It's in the conversation, certainly. There's a certain term that Dorna used to promote this weekend, which I'll get into in a moment, which kind of summed it up quite nicely. But I'll get to that in a bit, because joining us, he's not Cameron Buckley, but filling in his role, and he's now been contractually obligated to say that Honda sucks every 10 minutes until the end of this podcast. It's Ryan Eric King. Good to see
Hello.
You, King. How's it going?
Great to be back. When you said I would be here to talk about a landslide, I thought we were talking about something else, but this is just as good.
A reminder, King, what did you major in university?
Political science.
This is your field trip, King. Welcome aboard.
Oh, man. Advantage locked in for years? Don't need a degree to see that.
No. King, how long have you been sitting on that? Ask
Five
me for
minutes.
A friend.
5 minutes.
Liar. I don't believe you for a fucking second. Oh, dear. Good to have you back, King.
Also, King, I don't know if you got the memo. This is not the Portland E pre-review.
No. I know. Yeah, that was interesting. If you guys ever review that, I'll be up for that. I got some certain insights from me in there.
Look, King, we've got time. We've got time. We're not covering Formula E regularly anymore.
Rishi,
so if you want to get,
don't got time right now.
Unfortunately, I do. So let's consider this an impromptu keep it at 101. What did you want to disclose about your fun time in Portland? I'll leave it to you.
We all know them. We all love them. So, some of our supporters are paid by them. The Cardiac Cats. Jaguar.
You were there courtesy of Jaguar, and oh dear. For those who haven't seen Portland's Formula E weekend, let's just say Nick Cassidy could have pretty much closed out this championship fight with a couple of good performances, and he decided to shit the bed, and then shit in it again for good measure.
Not happy about it.
Like, RJ, your man's had one of the biggest Formula E fumbles of all time in the 10 years of this series.
I heard. Like, it was Wemmy and Montreal levels of catastrophic, like, downfall. I mean, are we really about to go into the London finale and let Antonio Felix da Costa, who might be looking for a way out of this championship, to go and win five of the last six, I should say.
Like,
no, five of the last seven. I've a, oh, Jesus. okay, whatever amount of victories it is like a lot for
he's won four out of the last five. Which in Formulary is virtually impossible. Like I don't know how the field has effed around this much and let DaCosta just dunk on everybody just to make a point. If his win wasn't taken away at Misano, he'd legitimately be in the title fight right about now.
And in post-race talk to him, it's pretty much like, yeah, he's on a hot streak right now, but his teammate Pascal Wehrlein still ahead of him in the championship.
Mm-hmm.
And the team, and him included, are focused on Pascal first. If he does have a chance at, you know, jumping ahead of Pascal, he'll take it. But Pascal's still number one priority at Porsche.
Well, yeah. they kind of have to, because Porsche still got half a chance of the constructors as well, because they slashed the deficit to Jaguar in half this weekend. It's like, I think it's 30-something points rather than 70. 322
to 289.
So that's, what, 43 points? If my maths is quickly right there. They've got a shot at the constructors. It's a long shot, but it's still a shot, and Jaguar will find a way to fumble this bag. And they really shouldn't, because this was supposed to be the year. This was supposed to be the one. Is this that Gary Neville quote? This was supposed to be the one that never failed. This was supposed to be the sure thing. And
I think before the weekend started, James Barkley told me that, yeah, this is the fourth year in a row that they have gone into the closing rounds with a chance at the title. And are they going to choke this 5 years in a row? Like, this is absurd.
Please, no.
As loyal Mitch Evans fan of the podcast, I will say, first time. We've been here. We know how this story ends. Mitch is Mitch's his last bruh again. We'll see what happens. If you haven't seen it, King's got some footage up on his Instagram page. You can go follow him at Ryan Eric King for some more deets on that.
That's for 2Ks.
There's more actually detailed information on Jalopnik. It'll probably be out tomorrow about the future of Jaguar as a whole in Formula E and as a car company.
Cool. So yeah, check that out on Jalopnik if you haven't already, courtesy of Ryan Eric. He does a very good job there, not only writing his own stuff, but also keeping Bradley Brownell in check. That takes some doing. They don't pay him enough for that shit. So well done, King, as ever. Do check that out if you haven't already. Do tell him we sent you over here at M101, because we care on this show. So that's fun. But we're going to get into the ass and TT. We're going to talk about Francesco Bagnaia absolutely beating the ever-loving shit out of the MotoGP field at Assen. I mean, it's kind of wild that Pecco Bagnaia has basically two of the most iconic MotoGP rounds of the calendar as his two staples. He's got Assen literally tattooed on his shoulder. That we should have known, quite frankly. So we'll talk about that, a little bit about Marc Marquez getting dinged with the tire pressure penalty. A big move in MotoGP City season, but not for a rider. It's for a team, because Pramac are actually leaving Ducati. Yeah, that's something I know for what I would say. But here we are. That's happening. We'll catch up on some of the big silly season moves over this time period as well, including Ryan Eric King rubbing his hands like Birdman seeing KTM's new rider lineup, because my man sold up.
Who needs Mark?
Famous last words there. And a little bit of a bonus topic as well, because it turns out Lewis Hamilton might be about to buy a MotoGP team. Possibly. Maybe. Allegedly. We'll see. More on that towards the end of the show. But here's the places you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. You can watch us on there if you like. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you have to follow our personal handles, you can at Ryan Eric King, that's with 2Ks, at Dre Harrison 101, and at RJ O'Connell if you want to follow RJ as well. Cam is usually at C Buckley 917. He's too busy trying to flog iPhones this week. We'll see him back in next week for the British Grand Prix review, which is bound to be fun. Also, if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. $10 gets you in the supporters club of our Discord server. We can listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded. Also, check all those details out and more on our website, motorsport101.com. Check out the blog if you want some extra thoughts from yours truly on said Ass and TT. All the latest news from that race and the Austrian Grand Prix and the Norris Verstappen clash heard all around the world, which now everybody insists was a massive overreaction 4 days later. Isn't that great?
It's the big dust the hands off, whoops, our bad.
Are you speaking on behalf of McLaren social media team right now, King? I'm asking for a friend here.
No, I'm just in full agreement with my friend and yours, Jake Boxleg, who was like, yeah, we were right to you know, have this opinion at the time. But now looking back, maybe it was a bit overblown.
Yeah. I love JBL for that. Like, he's now my colleague over at Autosport. And all I'm saying is West London, stand up. Acton meets Greenford, motherfuckers. Let's go. He talks, I produce his podcasts. We move. Let's get into the Ass and TT right after this. Let's not try to hide it here, people. This race was an absolute beating by Francesco Bagnaia, who was virtually unstoppable at his own favourite track, the Ass and TT. To put it into perspective, MotoGP called it, and I've never heard this term used before, a super grand slam.
Yeah, you probably never heard it before because most people just say super slam instead of super grand slam. Like they don't try and overcomplicate things.
Yeah, they don't say golden grand slam when someone does that in tennis. It's just golden slam. Like,
don't mention tennis in my presence. I might start crying again, okay? It's been a hard night, yeah? It was Andy Murray's last men's doubles game tonight, okay? I was a mess. Anyway, they called it the Super Grand Slam because Dorna couldn't help themselves. Because Pecco Bagnaia won both the Grand Prix and the sprint from pole position while leading every single lap in both races and setting the fastest lap in both of those races. Where it mattered, Bagnaia was perfect. In fact, he led every single session of the weekend except for Sunday warm-up because he didn't have a new set of tyres to use. But a man's own admittance. Besides that, he was perfect. Fun fact, that was the first time in his MotoGP career Francesco Bagnaia has ever led an FP1.
Yeah. Cam was going to bring this up. We should have probably known and packed up an FP1 because he never does this.
Yeah, I got that from our friend and yours, Lewis Sudderby, that mentioned it to him in an interview after Friday's running. Where I was like, you didn't realize you've never done that before, right? And it was like, really? He didn't even know. For those keeping score at home, Francesco Bagnaia's 94th Grand Prix weekend in the top flight. It's the first time he's ever led an FP1. And it showed because, yeah, it was a beat him down for the ages. Jorge Martin would finish both races, the sprint and the Grand Prix, in second place. So only minimal damage to the champion. He only lost 8 points in the end. Enea Bastianini was third in the Maverick Viñales was third in the sprint. Enea Bastianini was third in the Grand Prix. So yes, GP24, 1, 2, and 3 for the second round in a row. Also, fun fact, first double doubles, I like to call it. First time someone's won the sprint and Grand Prix double in back-to-back weekends since we brought in that rule change. Championship lead down to just 10 points between Bagnaia and Martin as we are quickly approaching the summer break in MotoGP. It's not a million miles away. I think it's right after the German Grand Prix this upcoming weekend. I mean, gents, you guys have all watched it. I mean, what more can you say besides that was just absolutely impervious riding from Bagnaia? Yeah.
No complaints here. If you are a Francesco Bagnaia fan, even more prevalent is just like, yeah, the GP24 is the bike to have. Marc Marquez, listen, he tried before getting the tire pressure penalty that dropped him from fourth on the road to 10th in the final classification. Tried, just couldn't keep pace with the leading trio of Pecco, Martin, and Bastianini. Martin tried, Bastianini tried, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, it's more clear here than at other venues that no matter how good a rider you are, if you are not on that GP24, you don't have a real chance. You need things to fall your way if you're on an inferior bike. That's the only way you're going to get a look in normal conditions, with everyone being able to go from, you know, lights out to the final lap, you don't stand a chance.
It was fun while it lasted. I literally mentioned this in my book. I was like, I hope you enjoyed the Marc Marquez title challenge for that first six races of the season when he was in fighting range, because Ducati's not going to keep developing their 23. That's last year's machinery. They're only going to keep pushing the 24 forward. And it's only going to get faster and faster. We mentioned it when we did the Marquez moving to Ducati podcast. That's a base standard 23 that rolled off the factory last year. And if we actually saw on Twitter, it turns out the bike that got the upgraded 23 parts was Fabio Di Giantonio, not Marc Marquez. They gave Digia more parts, and he ended up more competitive than he normally is. So
he inherited the fourth place that Marquez left behind.
Exactly. Yep. So he inherited fourth after Maverick Vinales got caught cutting the final chicane on the final lap and had to drop a position because of that track limits rule where if you breach them on the final lap, it's an automatic position drop rather than the five limit ruling that we normally get in the sport. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to be a bit of a homer here, he says as he records his podcast in a Marc Marquez t-shirt. It's hard not to miss Le Mans and Jerez when Marquez was able to bridge the gap on the 23, but that just looks more and more like that's not going to happen anymore, because this 24 is shellacking the field. It is. People wanted to deny that this bike wasn't like 2 or 3 tenths a lap faster, and it's becoming more and more evident that like the three relevant riders on GP24s, sorry, Frankie, are in another league at the moment. Bastianini's late race pace. I mean, he struggles at the start, but the way Bastianini carved through that second group of Maverick, Di Giantonio, Marquez, Pedro Acosta was in that group too. It was a ninja just scything through that field. I mean, they're in a different league right now, and that might be the best and worst thing to happen to this season, because not only has that happened, have you noticed very quietly that Francesco Bagnaia has won 4 out of the last 5?
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely a thing. He's on a 3-race win streak.
Yeah,
5 if you include the sprints.
Yeah, 5 if you include the sprints. 3 in a row, 4 out of the last 5. And it doesn't feel like it, only I think because Martin's pretty much followed him home in every instance. Like, it's those two and then it's everybody else right now. Bastianini's too slow for the most part of the start of races. Marquez is trying, but like, it's quickly becoming a 2-horse race here again. And Marquez dropping down the 10th because of the tire pressure. I mean, King, did you see that when Marquez actually got out of the way intentionally and let Di Giantonio pass him because he knew they were close on tire pressures? Shit was wild.
Yeah, it's that we all sort of knew in the back of our minds that this was a possibility when they introduced this rule. We just never seen anything like this before, where a rider actively had to let up to keep their pressures under control.
And it's funny because he still got clocked, and it's not in the script, but I'm going to talk about it a bit anyway. Like, after the race, he spoke to the media, and it turns out, because the rule is you have to be within the requirements for 60% of the race rather than 50% this year. They changed that to avoid riders getting disqualified for breaking that rule. As a compromise, but he went 1 lap over and by 0.01 bar. And it was the lap he was pushed off wide by Enea Bastianini dive bombing him at turn one. If anything, Marquez might have low-key exposed a market inefficiency when it comes to this rule, because if you're bumped off the road and your tire pressure goes illegal, is that on you? Like, it's... Apparently, he had a word with the stewards about it, because he talked about it with the media afterwards. He said, I've got no problem with the penalty. It's in the rules. That's what the rule book says. But even Freddie Spencer apparently agreed they might have to look at that in the regulations and maybe tweak the rule, because they clearly didn't take into account potential shoves, incidents, pushes into gravel, etc., that would spike your tire pressure potentially, which is...
I mean, NASCAR didn't really account for drivers getting forced below the yellow line at super speedways. They just said, hey, if you go below the yellow line and advance your position, you get dinged for like years and years.
And this time you get to keep it, etc. See, I knew that reference. Go me. I mean, King, is it something that they can... I mean, you know your regulations for motorsport better than most people. Is that something they should be tweaking or accounting for going forward? Because it seems a bit of a potentially gray area on this one.
Yeah, that's sort of the problem that we have with officiating motorsports, because there's just so many variables. There's countless ways situations can play out that just don't really exist in other traditional sports, so to speak, where generally in other sports where, say, you have to finish with certain components in your car or things like that, there's always that loophole inserted in where it's down to steward's discretion. And while you allow that leeway, allowing more leeway into the system creates more opportunities for inconsistency. So you run into that problem where fans don't want to see people get disqualified off of something that was out of their control, but they also want the rules to be applied consistently.
Good luck juggling that one in this damn sport, because MotoGP might be the biggest offenders in being inconsistent with its rulings in the last year and change. I mean, let's not forget, King, we were going to disqualify dudes for breaking this rule until the Thursday before the season started. It was a last minute call where it was like, Okay, we won't disqualify you. We'll just up the regulation a bit and we'll give you a 16-second time penalty if you fail. Fair? And everyone's like, all right, fair. It was like the owners and the players coming together to stop an NBA lockout at the last minute. It's just like absolutely wild scenes. But, I mean, there's not an awful lot more to take away from Aston's TT than that, if we're being completely honest with you. It was a completely dominant showing from Bagnaia. And yeah, going into Germany, where we actually had a Bagnaia-Martin fight last year, we could easily get the same again this year. That would be a fascinating fight. But right now, Bagnaia is looking pretty impervious, which is a scary thought for everybody else in the field right now. Although,
even for Mark, who basically, this is one of his three home tracks.
He's won here 11 times in his career across the three classes. He's an 11-time winner at the Saxon Ring. And even he is like, I'm probably not winning this weekend. a track they could probably name after him at this point. And he's saying that, I'm probably not winning this weekend. And although they were too busy trying to dodge Lewis Hamilton questions. More on that later. But we'll get into that briefly afterwards. But we got to talk a little bit about silly season stuff. And
silly season.
Because we've had a lot of falling outs and ramifications based on the Marquez to Ducati move. And it's been 3 weeks since our last MotoGP episode. We all said that there was one big domino that could fall, which could change everything. And, well, this past weekend, we finally found out whether that domino was going to fall or not. And turns out it did. Because Yamaha announced on Saturday a brand new 7-year partnership with the Pramac Racing team. And for those who don't know the full details on this is a wild agreement. Like, this was apparently Lynn Jarvis's final deal. He summed up as Yamaha director after, I think, 26 years managing that team. His last two deals was getting Fabio Quartararo tied down and apparently getting a satellite team, and he has got one, and they had to roll out the red carpet and line it in gold to make this one work, because apparently included in this deal, free bikes. The bikes are free. They're on the house. Equal partnership with the factory team. So no more customer bits, like in the old days of Yamaha when Tech Free got hand-me-downs. The rider salaries are paid for by Yamaha. It's like, you're part of the family. We're paying your salaries for you. And a future agreement to buy their Moto2 team as well. So you've got a development path on the way up potentially as well, using a Moto2 team you've got, which they currently own. It's the one that Ayumu Sasaki rides for at the moment. They've got a Moto2 team. So apparently Pramac's going to have a future agreement to buy that team and run it too. So there's big ramifications for this that are coming up, which we'll get to. But first and foremost, what do you guys make about this deal? Because my eyes lit up when I saw this. Holy shit.
Now, I'm gonna toss this one over to King. Now, King, don't you think that there's another predominantly blue manufacturer out there in international motorsport that could stand to entice a customer team or even like a partner team with a deal like this? Maybe a blue team that's a bit more French.
Yes, but unlike in that other championship you're referring to, there are not a lot of teams looking to make partnerships like that at the moment. And it feels like Suzuki were, well, wow.
Yamaha.
King, they've been dead.
Like, oh man, when you mentioned Alpine, I had a certain guy on the mind.
I wonder.
But yes, with Yamaha, like, this was always going to be, no matter what team Pramac picked, as long as it wasn't Ducati, it was a net gain for them, because you take one satellite team away from them. But you need at least one satellite team to help with development. You need to be in a situation where you have as much data coming in as possible, and that just simply says more running, more bikes. And yes, you want as many of your bikes on the grid to be up to date, the current bike as possible, but satellites are gonna want more than that nowadays with the Ducati Armada going around the track.
It's like, do you want to be a Yamaha partner, or do you want to win?
You know? I think that was like the snap reaction from everybody when it was first floated out there, and since it's been announced, it's like, well, if you like this era of Pramac racing, winning races and challenging for titles, well, say goodbye to that. Cool. At least in the short term.
Well, for me, it was pretty much a known fact from the end of the last offseason that Jorge Martin was not going to stay beyond 2024. And the moment you lose Jorge Martin, you're not winning a championship, because he's like the only proven guy in the last year that can really give Bagnaia a proper run for a championship. And Ducati did not care about the personal relationships they had with Martin or Bastianini, because they're now gone. Like, I don't think people have fully, like, taken on board the Ducati have pretty much sacrificed their entire floor to bring in Marc Marquez. They've lost a customer team, and they've lost two dudes who was either a championship runner-up or a third-place finisher in the championship for the last 2 years. In Bastianini and Martin, they're all going for Mark. They better be right about this. I mean, for me, Yamaha had to do this. Yamaha had to essentially overpay to get, because who else would be taking their bikes on? They tried VR46 earlier in the year, and Uccio politely told them to fuck off. like, Valentino wanted them on the grid, but Uccio was like, no, Valley, we know you're a Yamaha ambassador, but we're not doing this. I like winning. They promised to be a 25 and Fermin Aldeguer if we don't quit.
Aldeguer is probably the other factor that's like pushing all these dudes out.
Yeah, because the thing is with MotoGP and the relations between the factories and the satellite, it's about not only managing those relationships, but managing expectations. And when teams get to a certain point up the grid, they're going to want current equipment. They're going to want equipment that could win. And Ducati can't promise that to everybody. And eventually, another factory is going to pry someone out of that camp into theirs because they could give equipment that can compete, you know, maybe not for wins, but certainly be head and shoulders better than year-old Ducatis.
I mean, if you're going to hedge your bets anywhere else in this race, Yamaha is probably the place to go because Aprilia had already loaned themselves out the track house. KTM's had their four bikes. They wanted to have six, but Dorna told them again politely to fuck off. It's like, we have these seats for BMW, not you, basically. And Yamaha was the only manufacturer on the grid of any two bikes. They had to overpay to try and price somebody loose. And I didn't think it would be Pramac. Apparently, and I did hear this story from Jorge Campagnoli, who's one of their managers at Pramac, who said that after Bastianini passed Martin at Mugello and Ducati celebrated that like it was a win with Bastianini bringing home the 1-2 at Mugello in the special blue livery and that Martin had finished third, apparently that's when Pramac made the call they were going to switch because they were like, if you're supporting Jorge Martin and you're signing him on the factory team, because they've still fought at that point, they were signing Jorge Martin. Why are you celebrating Bastianini beating your future rider? We're going to switch. And I'm just like, you petty, petty people. Yo. Look, I think Yamaha is a decent cart to hitch your horse onto. I think they are definitely making steps in the right direction.
It's not a hopeless bike. Like, I'm literally reading Cam's notes verbatim, and it says, well, at least they didn't pick Honda.
That's very Cam. But we've also got a brand new 2027 regulation book to think about it. And you got to remember, with a 7-year agreement in place, that means 5 years under the new set of regulations for whatever Yamaha brings to the table.
If Yamaha knocks us out of the park with the 850cc bikes, this overpay could at least break even.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You enter that new regulatory era with essentially four factory bikes. Cam refers to, Pramac being factory two, and you enter that with long-term agreement with these teams, and if the agreement is long-term, you're going to develop relationship with their engineers at those teams, and effectively, they're going to become an extension of the factory squad.
Yeah, and on a simple level, they've just saved millions of pounds on their balance sheets going forward. Yeah. They're going to save a boatload of cash. Ducati was not prepared to cut Pramac a discount or any sort of deal. They're like, no, you have the honor of riding our bikes. We're giving you championship equipment. We're not going to help you, but here's our GP24 fresh off the press for you. This was always going to be, for me at least, a situation where I don't think Pramac was going to win without Jorge Martin, so I think they might as well gamble at this point and take the Yamaha project, take all those balance sheet savings, and hopefully with Yamaha's help get themselves back up the field into the future. I think that was always the way to go, especially once they found that they were losing Martin. It was like, Martin's the sort of guy where he's good enough where you can go, okay, maybe you stick around because you might win a championship with it. But with him gone and the inability to sign anybody else to replace him, it was always going to be a tough sell after that.
There'll be short-term pain for Pramac, potentially, but long-term gain is always there. And plus, you're already getting at least a rider, because I think it's now time to talk about Silly Season Part 2, because we haven't had a MotoGP episode in a while. We need to catch up on the moves that happened after Martin to Aprilia, and of course, Marquez to Ducati. Because since then, both Maverick Viñales and Enea Bastianini have signed for KTM Tech 3. It's not Gas Gas anymore. It's KTM Tech 3.
So rebranding.
another rebranding, another I would say Factory 2 situation.
Yeah, rebrand in the fact that they used to be KTM Tech 3, became Gas Gas to try to promote those bikes. Then they realized maybe it's not the best way to brand Tech 3.
And they're going back, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
All the orange is coming back. Mm.
Let's go. We also know who Jorge Martin's new teammate is going to be at Aprilia next year, because it's Marco Bezzecchi moving to Aprilia, the factory team, next year. That rider that's rumored to be heading to Pramac is Fabio Di Giantonio from VR46. So, hey, good for him. Tidy work to like keep getting jobs after it looked like not long ago he was going to be off the grid. And not really a move that you're going to see like short-term games on. But in 2025, Aleix Espargaró has found his life after retirement. He's going to be Honda's new test rider.
I actually genuinely really like that move from Honda. Aleix Espargaró is a great development head. That is a very smart rider's rider to have in your camp to help your development.
If he can't fix your bikes, I don't know what you do there.
We love Stefan Bradl on this show, but you know, there's only so much the man can do. And Aleix Espargaró he's made a career out of fixing bad bikes. So if anybody can do it, he can. And I think that's a very smart thinking man's ride that they've brought into that HRC unit.
He helped to develop the Suzuki into a capable bike, and he's helped turn the RSGP from a laughing stock to a genuine threat for the win on most weekends.
Mm-hmm.
You just hope it's enough.
I would also say, I mean, King, you boys at KTM, you've got a fleet over there now. Maverick Viñales is now your floor. That's scary to me, the talent you've got under your arsenal. What's your excuse going to be if you don't win races next year?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Because, like, that's always been, besides the quite antiquated bike designs that KTM first rolled out with when they entered the top class.
Trellis chassis, baby.
Yeah, it's like one of the core of KTM's racing program has always been the riders themselves. Rider development, trying to always have the best riders available. And next year, that seems to be the apex, the zenith of that strategy. It's in terms of a group of four. No other manufacturer has a group of four as strong as these four guys.
I agree. I fully agree. You've got Brad Binder, who was the best non-Ducati runner in the championship last year, fourth overall. Pedro Acosta, who, the rookie hype train has cooled off a little bit in recent rounds, but still potentially a generational level talent with a whole heap of upside and a marketer's wet dream. He's already gaining fans. I've seen more IKEA sharks in the crowd in the last month than I've ever seen in an actual IKEA, which is kind of wild to say the least. And then you've got a second team of Enea Bastianini, who was third in 2022, and Maverick Viñales, who has 10 MotoGP wins to his name.
Who was once Yamaha's ace rider. I'm looking at the table right now. 4 through 7 in this year's championship are going to be riding KTM bikes next year.
That's a fleet. That is the best four rider core in MotoGP. I would take that four over Aprilia all day long.
Will they have the equipment to deliver on that promise?
That's the only thing that's stopping them now. They need to find some consistency. On a good day, we know KTM can challenge for race victories, but they're just not having very many of those good days. Normally, it's when it's wet. When it's wet, KTM comes alive. But you only really get 2 or 3 wet days a year in a MotoGP season, if that. It's a summer sport. It's what we do for the most part. So you don't get wet races very often. But they can't use the riders as an excuse. And don't get me wrong, like, KTM's had a lot of rider mismanagement fumbles to get to this point. We're seeing one of those come back this weekend because Remy Gardner's filling in for Alex Rins after his wrist injury. And we all know Remy Gardner was promising until all of a sudden he was kicked to the curb after his dad got a bit too talky on Twitter. So
do you think he's using this? I mean, every sudden appointment like this is an audition. Do you think he sees like three, potentially at least two open seats within the Yamaha camp next year, thinking, I want one of these?
Maybe. I think the way people are talking, I think Pramac are eyeballing Sergio Garcia, who is leading the Moto2 championship right now, and potentially.
Not the golfer.
Not the golfer, of course. We can now make these jokes more often now because he's actually really good in Moto2 now. But he's in his own title fight with his own teammate, Iagura, because the Bosconoros are whipping that ass over Kalex right now. They've won 10 out of the last 11 Moto2 races dating back to last year. I can't not like KTM's rider moves. That's an incredibly strong core of riders. They just need a bike. And I'm. What do we make of Best to Aprilia then? Because this is an interesting one. Because on the one hand, we know how good Best can be. On the other hand, he's having an awful season this year.
Yeah. This year is looking more like less like why not Bez and more like that's why not Bez. And this weekend was really tough in that regard. It's always going to be tough for him to move up with Ducati structured the way they are. Factory seat is obviously very alluring, but man, Martin is going to be a tough man to measure up against.
King, have you heard of the career trajectory of Marco Bezzecchi and how weird it's all turned out in the end? Because I remember when he was in Moto2, right? He was offered the Aprilia seat when he was in Moto2. He turned it down back then. He was one of those guys like Joe Roberts who turned it down a few years ago. He got to MotoGP via the VR46 team. Turned out to be fantastic last year. Was third in the championship on the previous year's Duke. Was offered the Pramac seat last year alongside, instead of Frankie Morbidelli, turned it down to stay with VR46, and has now left VR46 a year later to go to Aprilia. What the hell? Who are Bez's people, King?
I think you see it a lot in racing where, whether it be the drivers themselves or their management, don't really have a lot of foresight. Where they know that the driver market is very dynamic. They know that year to year, drivers and riders get better, they get worse. But they don't really stop to think that the teams change. The teams could get better or worse. So when they look to sign somewhere, they think about what those teams are doing right now, not where they're going. And Aprilia is like the number one case study for this.
It's a fleet of people that have missed the potential boat to join that team and potentially have reaped a lot of success before Maverick Vinales got his opportunity to go back over there, because Joe Roberts turned that seat down a couple of years ago. He'd love to have that seat now. Let me tell you, Bez was another one, and now he's ended up going back over there. And look, if they hit their upsides, Jorge Martin and Marco Bezzecchi is an incredible team. Holy shit, the upside on that is off the charts. Like, you could potentially have the world champion in your midst next year, and a guy who was third in this championship only 8 months ago. That's an incredible team on paper. But there's question marks. Like, what is Martin going to do on an Aprilia, and what is Bez going to do on an Aprilia? Because we've seen the highs of Bez, but we've also seen the crushing lows, and this year he's been extra struggle-icious. So I don't know what we're going to get out of Aprilia's factory team. It's amazing that there's more talk about their partners in Trackhouse being the stable team next year. It looks like they're going to keep Raul Fernandez. Miguel Oliveira might be a bit sketchy. But it looks like Raul Fernandez is certainly good. They're going to build it around him, which, okay. I don't know about that one. We'll have to wait and see. I like Raul Fernandez. He's a talented rider, but I don't know. At least and sorry to offend the Americans here, but at least the hype talk on Joe Roberts has calmed down a little bit, where it's like, you know, maybe we don't need the 26-year-old year 7 Moto 2 veteran to make this synergy move. Like,
I think it was a joke from the beginning, like something that even Justin Marks shut down, where it's like, it's sort of a lot of non-Americans wanted this move to happen because simply American rider, American team. When American bike fans, when they see like the idea that now there is an American team on the grid, they just want the team to do well. They don't care who's riding for them.
Yeah, I think that's very much the case. I mean, Trackhouse is kind of in a weird place because they're getting a lot of shit from Portuguese fans as well that are pissed off Miguel Oliveira's not performing, which is, I like the Portuguese sports fans. Oh boy, they're like Europe's Argentina. I've seen Simon Patterson's mentions on Twitter, King. It is, it ain't pretty when Miguel shits the bed. Let me tell you, there is heat coming out of that country because they're thinking their man's being done dirty. It's
what is it like when CR7 shits the bed?
Well, we saw it.
might see more of it in a couple days.
Yeah. Also, to type a couple more loose ends. Yoann Mir, they've not announced it yet, but apparently very close to a new 2-year contract at Repsol Honda. God bless him. I don't know why, but here we are. And it looks like Alex Rins is going to sign another 2-year extension at Yamaha as well. So it looks like Yamaha is going to keep their factory lineup of Rins and Quartararo. It's looking like Honda will keep theirs of Mir and Luca Marini.
Bless him. We have already forgotten about Luca Marini because, man, the fall off when he went to Honda was just... It's so stark. God, please, Aleix, I'm begging you, summon some of that devil magic to make this bike. I'm not asking you to make them like, you know, perennial title contenders like every single year and just like humiliate everybody else. I just want them to be competitive again.
I think it'd be nice. I want Honda to be relevant. Of course I do. It's more fun when Honda's at the top, but they're not doing it with Luca Marini on one of those bikes. That man is painful right now. He's been the worst rider in MotoGP this year.
Just think about how much worse they'd be without Yoann Mir sticking around.
They need to be giving Mir everything he needs to succeed because they're lucky to have a rider that good in their camp still, quite frankly. But here we are. Before we get out of here as well, because I forgot to actually add this into the script, because this is something I've kind of forgot, but it's crept up again in news cycles because we just had Thursday's press conference for Germany this weekend, and of course Dorna couldn't wait to jump in on the rumors and ask, because the front three was Bagnaia, Martin, Marquez during part one of the press conference, and they asked him, hey, there's rumors doing the rounds that Lewis Hamilton might be interested in buying Gresini Racing Team. What do you guys think of that? And of course, they were all like, oh, we'd love this. We'd love Hamilton getting a piece of this pie. And I wanted to ask, Jens, what did you make potentially of that? Because I think it's potentially fascinating, but it seems to be a fair amount of smoke. It's been reported by decent names that there might actually be some substance to this.
Yeah, and Hamilton's already like downplayed this in the Thursday press conferences leading into the British Grand Prix for cars.
I don't know. Apart from whether it could or couldn't happen, I'm past that to the stage of why does it matter? How much of an impact will Lewis Hamilton buying a team actually have to the sport as a whole? Like, I don't see many Hamilton fans convert to becoming Denver Broncos fans when he took up an ownership stake in that team.
I mean, have you seen the Denver Broncos?
Yeah.
In their current state?
What? X44's Extreme E team no longer exists, and they went away with literally no fanfare, no complaints, no at all. It's like they just faded into obscurity. It's something that could help Lewis's bank account. Sure. Besides that, I don't think it'll have a bigger impact on the sport. I don't think we'll see an influx of fans into MotoGP if this does even happen.
I don't think so either. Like, the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking this is just a vanity move for Lewis, just to say he has something cool on his... It's like when entrepreneurs with more money than sense want to have the cool brand name on their portfolio. It's like, oh, I own 2% of Nike or something crazy like that. I just, for me, the numbers I've heard are kind of wild. I mean, allegedly, it's around 10 million euros to buy this team, which... Yeah, Lewis could easily afford that or have some sort of consortium come together and afford that easy. It's not a huge amount of money for an independent team. But bike fans and F1 fans are generally very separate. Like, not many people watch both, in my opinion. A lot of people just don't watch bike racing because they just think it's too much, which is understandable, of course. Like you said, King, like, Hamilton was one of the first, what I like to call, celebrity owners of a sports franchise who, it's basically like an influencer deal. You buy a very small fraction of a sports team in exchange for a bunch of PR and occasional, like, promotion work for them, and you get a slice of the pie for a discounted rate, like Tom Brady at Birmingham City, for example.
It goes back to that other blue factory team in another major world championship.
Yeah, because yeah. They did that with a bunch of other celebrities, and generally the way I saw it play out at Alpine is the way I've seen it described elsewhere on certain other podcasts about owning ownership stakes in certain franchises, say in the NBA, in say the Minnesota Timberwolves, where basically, yes, you own a stake in the team, but you're not the owner, but that stake asserts, you know, certain privileges to it. You get, say, guaranteed luxury seats at games. Obviously, you could eventually sell that stake for a profit later on.
Mm-hmm. Or Glenn Taylor can just kick you out and say, actually, it's not for sale anymore because I see my team getting close to championship.
That's true. And it's a nice thing to have. It's different for certain people. And I don't think Lewis Hamilton's at the point of his life where he would be there day to day.
No
chance.
Helping
manage a team. It's, if it was that scenario, I'd say that, yes, there's a massive deal for MotoGP, but it's not that.
It's a nice thing to have in his portfolio, but I don't see Hamilton magically rolling up in a MotoGP. This is a guy that's just signed a 2-year deal to stay with a brand new Formula One team and a big one at Ferrari. You assuming Hamilton at least sees out that contract. He's going to be there till his age 42 season. Like, you're not going to be getting Hamilton rolling up at these at Gresini on a weekend because MotoGP's calendar is like 70% crossed over with F1's. There's only so many weekends to go around. Like, Hamilton isn't suddenly going to make a bunch of people watch MotoGP. I mean, yeah, let's not, like, forget.
The easiest comparison I'd make, there is not that same groundswell of support for Team VR46 as there is for Valentino Rossi himself.
No. People don't care about Bez and DJ Antonio or potentially Morbidelli going over there on the same level because Valley is Valley. And Valley's not there every week. Like, he's there every other week, maybe. But even still, like, he's not... Like, you're not seeing people... Have you seen a huge fleet of VR46 t-shirts in the MotoGP crowd? No, it's the big ones. It's Bagnaia, it's Marquez, it's old Rossi gear from when he was there still riding. You're not seeing a bunch of Bez supporters rolling around. So, no, I completely agree. It's and let's not forget the real kicker here. Gresini's about to lose Marc Marquez. Like... And Martin Marquez is the one MotoGP rider that is a genuine needle mover. Maybe not like Valley was in the day, but he's the biggest star in the sport now by miles. People don't fuck with Bagnaia like that unless he's in Italy.
Yeah, like, and kind of, you know, circle back to the point we were making where it's like we're expecting that same groundswell of support that Lewis Hamilton has in F1 to somehow not only cross the barrier over to MotoGP, but also cross that barrier from actual competitor to team owner.
I think that groundswell of support is just like following Valentino Rossi to his day job of driving BMWs.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are way more excited for that than VR46.
Yeah, so true. That's actually, the more you, yeah, the, I saw people were mobbing Valentino at Le Mans this year when they were doing autocross, because Rossi is arguably still pound for pound.
They just came for him.
Yeah, in every sense. So, yeah, it's, I Hamilton's not like that, and I don't, I, like, King, have you bought any non-alcoholic tequila lately, by any chance? No,
no, I have not.
No, didn't think so somehow. No, and if I'm going to be real for a minute here, if this is true, Grassini, a bit of advice. Maybe don't appropriate the man's hair on social media by photoshopping it on all your staff. Not a great look.
Tone deaf, real tone deaf.
Yeah, it was gonna bring me to like another point, like, even if Lewis Hamilton is not like hands-on, do you think like even some hands-off influence from him? And I also know we should not be putting like bettering the paddock culture on one or two people at a time. But do you think even that could help make the MotoGP paddock a better, more tolerant place to be?
No. Yeah, being completely like... blunt.
The only way, because when it comes to sporting competitions and initiatives, movements like that literally have to come from like a massive groundswell, like the NBA, where it's a black majority league. So it's easy to get all the players on board for a shift like that. Or it needs to come from the top down, where leadership of the series firmly wants this to happen. And neither is the case in MotoGP.
No, I've been one of the few people that's been very vocal about this. I stand by what I said last year when I was covering Silverstone, the British Grand Prix for the race. I was the only black man in their media room. They have a crippling lack of diversity. We got to remember, we are dealing with a Spanish-based championship with a lot of Italian influence. And unfortunately, when it comes to the world of sports, their countries have horrible reputations when it comes to dealing with racism, or more specifically, not dealing with racism. Having Hamilton in the paddock is not going to suddenly magically fix those problems. And if Grassini was anything to go by with that rumor in their back pocket and they did that, what does that tell you about the state of play? Somebody thought that was okay.
Yep. Well, at that point, multiple people would have had to think that was okay.
Yeah. I don't know how grounded in substance this actual bid or offer is. I don't know for sure. But if there is a firm offer in place from Hamilton to buy this team, I sincerely hope that what's just happened on social media with their team hasn't gotten through to the Hamilton camp yet. Because if it has, that might be a genuine deal breaker. Because we know Hamilton is a very principled man when it comes to these matters. Ask him what he thinks of the Andretti family before you want to crack on about things like that. So for their sake, if they are seriously considering selling this team, I sincerely hope that their social media manager hasn't jeopardized it for them, because they are a fun team. They are a likable team. I find it disappointing that they felt like they had to go so far, but to lean into these rumors with a culturally inappropriate joke and disappointingly seeing both their riders in the comments laughing at it. They can do better. They can all do better. And if you guys are hanging on to a miracle that Hamilton's going to suddenly come over and fix that, then I don't know what to tell you, but you're going to be disappointed. Unfortunately. Big weekend coming up of motorsport coming up next time by. We have the big one for Formula One, the British Grand Prix. Rumored over 450,000 expected over this weekend.
I thought that race wasn't selling out because of Max Verstappen dominance.
And yet, the most tickets are still sold out. They might not sell out, but they're still going to have a stupidly high attendance. Do not get it twisted on that one. So F1's British Grand Prix, will we get Norris Verstappen too? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. MotoGP's German Grand Prix this weekend as well. The Sachsenring, can Marquez somehow make it a dirty dozen of wins at that track against Francesco Bagnaia, who is the hottest man in the world? Is Cam would say he's hotter than fish grease at the moment. We'll have to wait and see how that goes down. And a moment of history for our friends at IndyCar, their first ever hybrid powered race in at Mid-Ohio this weekend. Big fan of James Hinchcliffe giving away that he's driving the car as a practice this weekend and almost got everybody on Twitter to have a heart attack when he said he was taking over the 66, which I thought was very funny. Well played,
Hinch. David
well
Lucas just got here.
Grand opening, grand closing.
How very McLaren of you, Meyer Shank.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't put it past him on that one. More on that next week, because we may have heard the news that Alex Rossi is not going to be a McLaren driver for too much longer. More on that on our IndyCar episode next week. So an absolutely heaped weekend of motorsport coming up. I can't wait to get into some of this next week. So at least two shows, probably three. We'll have to wait and see how we go. But yeah, British Grand Prix, German Grand Prix, IndyCar in Mid-Ohio with hybrid power. Looking forward to all of that. But places you can find us one more time: YouTube, Facebook, Motorsport101, Motorsport_101 on Twitter, and Motorsport101 pod on Instagram, @DreHarrison101, @RJOConnell, @RyanEricKing on Elon's failed business investment, motorsport101.com and the website, of course. And if you really like us, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Ryan Eric King. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
And don't get it twisted. This is absolutely still a Tory pack watch.
Hey, yo. These vote counts for reform look terrifying.
Fuck that.